Hello, my name is Will, and welcome to our fourth Wednesday evening, thinking about how the Psalms help us to survive and thrive throughout the summer. Now, we all know that the Christian life is full of threats to our spiritual survival and flourishing. And the Psalms are brilliant because they speak into so many of those situations. Last week, we thought about the problem, the threat of unjust suffering. And the week before that, we thought about sin. But this week's problem, this week's threat to our spiritual survival may seem a little bit strange to our ears. It's the rich and famous. And the question that Psalm 49 addresses is this: why is it wrong to fear the rich? Now, we probably wouldn't put the rich and famous at the top of our list of threats to our spiritual thriving this summer, would we? After all, in many ways, the rich help us thrive. Everyone loves to follow a celebrity or two on Twitter. Apple have given us the iPhone. Bill Gates gives his money to water treatment projects across the world. And our lawmakers and politicians make decisions for the good of our country every day. The rich do really help us thrive. Of course, there are others who are bent on destruction. That's the thing about money. It can be used to blackmail, to manipulate people. The human heart will do crazy things because of money. Slavery's been in the news recently, and I think you can make a pretty good case that slavery, whether past or present, thrives because it makes people rich. But it also destroys people's lives. And it's right, it's normal that people would fear the rich. So why is it wrong to fear the rich? For most of us, I think fearing the rich is probably quite hard to spot. I wonder if you've noticed it in your life. We're not talking about that kind of fear you get when you stand on top of a skyscraper and look down. No, we're talking about the kind of fear you get when you stand at the bottom of a skyscraper and look up. Silent intimidation. Whether directly or indirectly, I suspect that many of us, at least some of us, are subtly but genuinely intimidated by the rich and famous. And that is a threat to our spiritual survival this summer. Perhaps you work in an office with rich and powerful people, and one or two of them say to you, "Well, could you just adjust the numbers slightly?" It can be hard to stand up to them, can't it? Perhaps you have a parent or a relative who has given you a sum of money and they now exert some kind of control over your life. Well, it can be very hard to make decisions now that you stand in their debt, can't it? Perhaps you come to church on Sundays and your wardrobe, well, it just isn't quite up to standard. You know it's not quite as great as that famous person in the poster on the tube. And to be honest, it's not quite as great as the person in the fourth row sitting next to you. You feel intimidated. Perhaps you just find it hard to speak about Jesus to your friends at school. Obviously, you know you should speak about Jesus to your friends at school, but the problem is the cool guys are standing right over there and it's not worth it. Perhaps you're not a Christian listening in tonight and you know that Christianity is true, but you're just afraid to commit to following Christ. Following Jesus would be too much. It wouldn't be worth your while because of what your politically correct friends may say or your high-pressure family. To be intimidated by the rich and famous feels normal, doesn't it? To fear the influential feels right. That's the way they want it. That's the way the world works. But we're asking the question, why is it wrong to fear the rich? Well, Psalm 49 was written to help us survive and thrive this summer and beyond. And that's because Psalm 49 is a wisdom psalm. In the Bible's thinking, to be wise means that we understand something about life so that we thrive in God's world. And the message of Psalm 49 is that there's a message of wisdom that the whole world needs to hear. Look at how the psalm begins in verse 1 to 4. "Hear this, all peoples. Give ear, all inhabitants of the world, both low and high, rich and poor together. My mouth shall speak wisdom, and the meditation of my heart shall be understanding. I will incline my ear to a proverb. I will solve my riddle to the music of the lyre." The psalmist is like a man standing on top of the gherkin with a megaphone, except he's not scared. And he is shouting to the world. He has pondered something about life that he's now understood, and he wants the world to understand with him. Psalm 49 begins and ends with this call to understanding. In verses 1 to 4, if the world hears this message and understands it, it will be wise. But right at the end in verse 20, if a person neglects this understanding, they will perish like a brainless animal. What is this message that the psalmist has for the world? Quite simply, it is that we should not fear the rich. The psalmist himself knows what it means to fear the rich, and we glance at his predicament in verses 5 to 6. He's experienced this firsthand. Look down at verse 5. Why should I fear in times of trouble when the iniquity of those who cheat me surrounds me, those who trust in their wealth and boast of the abundance of their riches? See, in some way, the psalmist is losing out because of the wealthy. Literally, the iniquity of those who cheat him is at his heels. The rich are biting him, devouring him, and he feels insecure, like you would if you had a snake in your bathroom. But he knows that his reaction isn't right, and so he says, "Why should I fear in times of trouble?" And so begins the psalmist's meditation on why we should not fear, and he wants us to listen in with him. He wants us to ponder something, to chew on something, to think deeply about something, so that we won't fear the rich. Notice how the psalm moves in verse 5 from a question, why should I fear in times of trouble, to verse 16 with a bold declaration, be not afraid when a man becomes rich. The psalmist wants us to listen in so that we change, so that we move from fear to not fearing. That's what I love about the Psalms. They're so great. They're like trusted friends who draw alongside us in our rawest of emotions. They talk to us, often through the voice of someone who's experienced something very similar to us. And they help us move through, to move into confidence and change. Now, it's worth noticing as we go through that the psalmist's aim is not to tell us or to tell the rich that having money is bad. And nor is his aim to tell the poor that having no money is good. No, the psalm addresses both low and high, rich and poor together, verse 2. No, the psalmist's aim is to replace our confidence in money, which, let's be honest, is something that both rich and poor do struggle with. He wants to replace confidence in money with confidence in God. Only confidence in God will make us wise so that we won't fear the rich. So why is it wrong to fear the rich? Well, we'll find out the reasons when we come back from our discussion groups in a few minutes. Well, the way in which the psalmist helps us not to fear the rich is by making us meditate on money in the cold light of death. The main body of Psalm 49 is like a journey down into the pit. The psalmist wants to give us a guided tour of the grave so that we will think wisely about the eternal value of money. You'll see on the handout, if you download it, that the structure of Psalm 49 is actually like a pit. So the psalmist takes us down into death in verses 5 to 12, and then in verses 13 to 20, he brings us back up again. And the key word at the center of each of the two main sections of Psalm 49 is the word ransom. More on that in a minute. But the point of our first section is this. Why is it wrong to fear the rich? Because no human wealth can ransom you from death. We've already seen that in verse 5, the psalmist is reasoning with himself as to why he and we should not fear the rich. And in verse 6, he points to the reason why the rich are scary. They boast. Look down at verses 5 and 6 again. Why should I fear in times of trouble when the iniquity of those who cheat me surrounds me, those who trust in their wealth and boast of the abundance of their riches? Now, in the Bible, there's nothing inherently wrong with money. Money is a good gift from God. But money is also a powerful resource. It can buy you things to make you look impressive. So we buy kitchens and Apple Watches and sunglasses and even trendy face masks and even things that the shops don't sell, like power and reputation and status and, if we're lucky, fame. The human heart craves these things because they make us feel important, and therefore we can boast in front of others. But the problem with boasting is that it sets you against me and it sets us against God. Boasting tells God, I'm worth noticing. And boasting tells you that I think I'm better than you. And that's when things get scary. And so the psalm moves on in verses 7 to 9 and makes the point, therefore, that such boasting is bankrupt in the face of death. Verses 7 to 9, truly no man can ransom another or give to God the price of his life. For the ransom of their life is costly and can never suffice, that he should live on forever and never see the pit. A ransom is a price needed to be paid to free someone from captivity. So think of a British couple kidnapped by Somali pirates. The UK government needs to pay the ransom in order to set them free. Well, here's the objective truth of Psalm 49. Every human being, whether rich or poor, is a hostage to death, and no amount of human wealth can pay the ransom. I think the shadow of Genesis 3 lurks behind verses 7 to 9. Humanity was made in the beginning to glorify God, to make God look great as his image bearer throughout the world. But instead, we committed treason against God, rebelling against him, choosing to make ourselves look great. Through our sin, we defile God's world, we destroy each other, and we fail to glorify God as we ought. In the Bible's worldview, therefore, human sin is robbery of the glory of God. To dishonor God is an infinite crime that deserves an infinite punishment. And so nothing could be more ridiculous than for a sinner who deserves eternal death to approach God and say, do you take cash? Did you see my cancer research donation? I really hope it'll cover the damage. It won't work. Human beings, we love to think that there's something about us, whether it's our sporting achievements, or whether it's our business acumen, or whether it's our ministry success, or even our money, that will buy us out of death. But verses 8 to 9 are crystal clear. For the ransom of their life is costly and can never suffice, that he should live on forever and never see the pit. No human wealth can ransom us from death. If God were to accept payment for the damage, it would require a perfect life lived in perfect love of God and neighbor. But there is no such person. That's why 100 out of 100 people die. No one is righteous, no, not one. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. The wages of sin is death. And verse 10 of Psalm 49 agrees. Look down. For he sees that even the wise die. The fool and the stupid alike must perish. It doesn't matter whether you are rich or poor, wise or foolish, you will die. Money is worthless in the face of death. And the rest of verses 10 to 11 shows this to be true. A sinner will always leave their wealth to others. A person may buy a luxury villa in Spain and it may be very, very nice, but their eternal home will be in the grave. I discovered in preparing this talk that a few years ago you could pay $4.99 to some scientists and they would name a planet in some distant galaxy after you. That's pretty cool. But verse 11 again, a person may even call lands, planets, after their own name, some desperate attempt to perpetuate their legacy, to prove to the people still alive that they really did matter. But in the end, death will be their dwelling place to all generations. So the psalmist concludes the first half of his guided tour in verse 12 with this pretty sobering statement. Man in his pomp will not remain. He is like the beasts that perish. That word pomp could be written costliness. It's apparently similar to the word in verse 8, costly. If you trust in your costliness, you will end up perishing because no human costliness can ransom you from death. Now, can we see why this is so helpful in helping us to not fear the rich? The psalmist wants us to ponder the perishability of wealth. He wants us to meditate on its worthlessness, its futility in light of death. The rich and famous may look impressive, they may even look powerful, they may even look scary. They may dominate, they may intimidate with their costly clothes, with their Twitter tirades, but in the end, no amount of fame or reputation or influence can ransom them from death. It is just too costly. The rich and famous are like people who are trying to buy Buckingham Palace with coupons out of the newspaper. It just isn't going to work. And so we don't need to fear them. Well, Psalm 49 has a second reason why we shouldn't fear the rich. And we will discover that when we come back from our discussion groups again in a few minutes. Well, the psalmist has concluded his first half of his guided tour of the grave, and there is wisdom in meditating on the truth that no human wealth can ransom us from death. However, one might argue that such wisdom on its own really isn't enough to breed lasting confidence. You can imagine someone who is trusting in their wealth agreeing with the psalmist and saying, yes, money is futile in the face of death. But they may also say, well, money's also not futile in life. Money buys nice gadgets and fast cars. Why can't I just enjoy my cash for a few years? And we might imagine the psalmist, maybe some of us are thinking the same thing. Why can't we just enjoy money now? After all, verse 10 made the sobering point that even the wise die. And so if being wise ultimately makes no difference at all in the face of death, well, why shouldn't we place confidence in money now, even just for a little bit? Well, the second half of Psalm 49 clarifies the first. The psalmist is now clear that when we fear the rich, what is needed is not simply knowledge that human wealth cannot ransom us from death, but also, secondly, that only God can. The key verse in our second section is verse 15. Verse 15, but God will ransom my soul from the power of Sheol, for he will receive me. Well, before we get there, the psalmist wants us to just linger a little longer in the pit. And so look down before we get there to verses 13 to 14. This is the path of those who have foolish confidence. Yet after them, people approve of their boasts. Like sheep, they are appointed for Sheol. Death shall be their shepherd, and the upright shall rule over them in the morning. Their form shall be consumed in Sheol, with no place to dwell. As the psalmist stands in the pit in verse 13, he has two things that have become clearer to him. The first is the psalmist now sees the rich for who they really are. Verse 13, confidence in wealth is not just futile, but foolish. A person may think that they are living for wealth, and that makes them as free as a bird. Verse 14 says they are like trapped sheep with an appointment that cannot be cancelled in Sheol. A person may think that they are ruling the world with their wealth, unstoppable. But verse 14 again says that they are being ruled by death like a shepherd. The Old Testament word Sheol describes the grave. It's essentially equivalent to what Jesus would later describe as hell. And whereas in verse 11, the psalmist described the grave as the dwelling place of the rich, Now in verse 14, he sees it so much more clearly. It's not their home at all. Their form shall be consumed in Sheol, with no place to dwell. The psalmist sees the rich for what they really are, and their end is horrifying. But secondly, the psalmist also sees now not one group of people, but two. So yes, death is shepherding those who trust in wealth. And yes, according to verse 10, even the wise die. But verse 14, did you notice that little phrase? The upright shall rule over them in the morning. In some ways, Psalm 49 resolves the paradox of unjust Christian suffering that we noticed last week in Psalm 44. In Psalm 44, the faithful are like sheep for slaughter. However, now in Psalm 49, from the perspective of eternity, things are the other way round. The wealthy wicked will be like sheep slaughtered, whereas the upright will rule over them in the morning, which is at least a hint of life after death. The reason is because God will ransom their souls from the power of Sheol. This is why verse 15 is the key verse in the second section, and I think in the whole psalm. But God will ransom my soul from the power of Sheol, for he will receive me. God will ransom my soul. That is, God will pay the price that money cannot. And God will ransom my soul from the power of Sheol. That is, yes, the wise may die, but death can no longer have claim on that person, can no longer exercise power over that person, because God has paid the ransom that money could not. God, not Sheol, will receive me. Now, there's no clue in Psalm 49, I don't think, as to what this ransom actually is. The word may have reminded Jewish readers of the Exodus. In the Exodus, God ransomed his people. He redeemed them from the death cult of Egypt at the price of a lamb. And as the Old Testament progressed, and particularly in the book of Psalms as a whole, the God of the first Exodus was expected to accomplish a second. That is what believers in the Old Testament anticipated. And so this is the confidence that God's people need as they are tempted to fear the rich and tempted to fear death. The way out of the pit lies not in money, but in God, who ransoms. Who ransoms, according to the New Testament, not with perishable things such as silver or gold, but with the precious blood of Christ, like that of a lamb without blemish or spot. Therefore, when God ransoms our souls, and what a thing that is, we do not need to fear the rich. Verses 16 to 20 could not be more clear. Be not afraid when a man becomes rich, when the glory of his house increases. For when he dies, he will carry nothing away. His glory will not go down after him. For though while he lives, he counts himself blessed, and though you get praise when you do well for yourself, his soul will go to the generation of his fathers, who will never again see the light. Man in his pomp, yet without understanding, is like the beasts that perish. See, confidence in wealth is so foolish. Death will always rob you of your riches. That's why Jesus said, "For whoever would save his life will lose it. For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? For what can a man give in return for his soul? Nothing." We really should ponder the fragility of wealth this summer, and we should not fear the rich. But if confidence in wealth is foolish, well, confidence in God's ransom is wise. Here's something to meditate on this summer. In God's economy, death is always the means to greater wealth. This isn't the prosperity gospel. You may have very little in this life as a Christian. But if God ransoms your soul, forgiving your sin in Christ and qualifying you to share in the inheritance of his Son, one day to rule with Jesus in the morning of the resurrection in the new creation, well, you are beyond rich. So let's thrive this summer. Let's learn verse 15 off by heart. And let's proclaim this message from the rooftops and make the world wise. We so need to hear this, don't we? Hear this, all peoples. Give ear, all inhabitants of the world, both low and high, rich and poor together. God will ransom my soul from the power of Sheol, for he will receive me. Or as the New Testament puts it, for there is one God and one mediator between God and men, the man Christ Jesus, who gave not his money, but himself as a ransom for all. We do not need to fear the rich.